Okay, this coming Shabbos we're going to have the honor and privilege of reading Parshas Emor, and we begin, of course, with the famous comment, Emor al ha-kohanim b'nei Aaron v'amarta lehem, speak to the children of Aaron and say unto them. Now, why is there a double language of Emor v'amarta? And Rashi explains that it adds the extra responsibility to the older ones to teach the younger ones. But why is this lesson being taught here with the kohanim in all of places? So the great Rebbe Moshe Schnurbach, the Dayan of the Eda Charedis, Shalita, explains that when it comes to the matters of Kedusha, one tends to think that these levels and rules only apply to adults, and so hence the Torah teaches us that it's incumbent upon us to teach our young that they should also learn about Kedusha and strive to implement its values and levels even at the youngest of ages. So we also continue that the Kohanim are not allowed to just go ahead and haphazardly be involved. They're not allowed to become tamei kiyam l'sheiroa karovi lav, except for his wife and six other relatives. Now, why is the wife the first one listed as one of the relatives he must become tamei for? After all, his relationship with her is actually the one that starts last. He marries long after he has siblings, long after he has a parent, and maybe before he has children. But certainly, this is the most removed of relationships. So, Zalman Saratskin, the Lutzke Rav Zatzal, explains that all of a Kohen's relatives from his youth, his parents, his siblings, etc., are all part of his past. The relationship with his wife, however, is the one of the future, of potential. You see, when we build our future on the foundation of the past, and likely still have relationships with those people of the past, the future with one's wife is a dream and a vision of hope. And so it therefore takes precedent as the most important. And that's kind of an important thing for us to remember when we're dealing with life, that our wives have to come first. And sometimes that gets lost upon us when we are looking at large. Later in the parasha, after we deal with the Kohanim, we also are told about certain karbanos, and one in particular we highlight is Bishor Osovies Benolo Sishchatu B'yom Echad. It and its offspring shall not be slaughtered on the same day. Now, why is this mitzvah listed near the section that deals with the laws of Yom Tov? So Rabbi Avigdor Nebensal Shalita noted that the Gemara in Chulin on Daf Pei Gimel identifies four times that one needs to be informed when the mother was sold. And all of them are around Yom Tovim, when people tend to buy and shecht more meat, and the potential of violating the Torah prohibition of Osovi Espino is quite high. And so Rav Nebensal adds that these are the times that need an extra layer of protection for this mitzvah, and thus it was juxtaposed to the laws of Yom Tov. We're also told that we get into the laws of Yom Tov, and we're told in regard to Shemitah, in regard to Sfiras HaOmer, we are told, Sheva Shabbosos to Mimos Tiena, that they should complete seven complete Shabbosos. Now, Mori V'Rabbi Rav Shechter Shalita noted that it's only here in Parshas Emor, where the count of Sfira is in days, not weeks, that we speak of Tamimos, as opposed to in Parshas Re, when we talk about Shiva Shavuos Tisparlach, we talk about counting 7 weeks. Why? What's the difference? So Rav Shechter quoted Rabbi Salavechik Zatzal, who explained that there are two different aspects to the counting of Sfira, that of the aspect of the individual's responsibility to count, and that of the community. The individual count needs to be Tamim, it needs to be complete, while that of the community does not need to be complete. And thus, if one did not count at night, according to the Bahag, he or she counts without a bracha during the day, since the individual mitzvah is passed. And that which remains is the communal mitzvah, that is, to establish Shavuos. So the Tmimos is something that requires each day to be complete and total, and that means a nighttime count, according to the Bahag. We're finally at the end of the parsha. We read the story of the Mekalal, and I'd like to share two quick thoughts there within. We're first told, Vayitzei ben isha Yisraelis v'hu ben ish Mitzri, the son of a Jewish woman went out. And Rashi notes that the connection between the episode of the Mekalal and the parsha of the Lechem Apanim, which comes right before it, is in the fact that the unnamed individual here criticized the fact that the Lechem Apanim is eaten cold and stale after so many days. Another Jew rebuked him for his harsh disrespect, and he cursed Hashem as a result. Now, why did he care if the lechem apanim is eaten warm or cold? He wasn't a Kohen. So Rabbi Ber Wein Shlita suggested that the point that irked him was whether the lechem was chametz or matzah. After all, if it was baked each day, it could be served warm and fresh as chametz. However, if it was bacon and left to rest for at least 7 days, it most certainly must have been non-chametz, it must have been matzah. After all, matzah can last for a long period of time. He was right. The lechem apanim had to be matzah. However, the constant reminder of his forebears, he was, after all, a Ben Ish Mitzri, he was the son of an Egyptian, and the shortcomings of the Mitzriim was too much in his face for him to handle forever. And so it set him off, and it caused this terrible episode. And the Gemara in Bava Metzia on Daf Nun Tes says that if someone has a family member who was once hanged, you can't even use the word hang in an innocuous manner, lest you bring him shame. We have some sort of a responsibility in our lives that we sometimes forget. We tend to sometimes be a little bit remindful of an episode that happens in somebody's past. We have a responsibility to step up to the plate and not fall in that process. B'shem imo, Shlomis Bas Divri Lamate Dun. His name and his mother's name was Shlomis Bas Divri. Now we know his mother's name, but why do we bother to mention his mother's name and we never bother to mention his own? So my dear friend from Pittsburgh, the Rav of Pittsburgh, Rav Daniel Halevi Yalkut Shalita, suggested that the Torah is highlighting the role a mother plays in the Kedusha of the family life. A mother can create an atmosphere of Kedusha in everyday life, or she can inject a cynicism to the potential of Kedusha. And Rashi and Ibn Ezra both suggest that his cursing was all about the Karbanos, and perhaps that lack of sensitivity for Kedusha comes from Shlomis, who after all failed to build a home that was a mikdash, like Sarah Imenu's. Parents and grandparents have to learn the lesson to be sensitive to the degree to which the messages they give their children can create the proper atmosphere, or they might come, chalila, to subtly poison the waters. And so when the Torah is going back to give us the law and the verdict on the Mekalo, the Torah goes way above the on top and gives us a whole bunch of laws in the process. And we're told, V'ish ki yake kol nefesh adam, when a man strikes another person, mos yumas. Now Moshe just asked about the Mekalo. So why does Hashem give him all the rules of somebody who hits somebody else over here? So Moshe Feinstein's Zatzal explained that Hashem wanted to teach that before anyone executes capital punishment out of a love of Hashem, he must have Avas Yisrael. And these halachos show that not only how much Hashem values human life, but also the sensitivity to human suffering and even loss of money. Finally, in the Haftorah, we're told, Ha'amana asher tiyal manami kohen yikachu. We're told that a widow who is the widow of a kohen he should take. And Rashi notes that this refers to the kohen gadol. Barbanel and Malbim disagree, arguing that in the future, the Kohanim will not be able to marry widows like the Kohen Gadol can't. And the difference between them and the Kohen Gadol will be that they can marry a Kohen's widow. So the great Rav Gideon Weitzman Shalita from Machon Pua explains that as active teachers of the Jewish people, the Kohanim need to achieve a higher level of Kedusha, and thus they will have a stronger limit in order to be able to be in a better position to teach the people how to properly sacrifice and sanctify their lives, and that's something that we have to learn from them. And so, my dear friends, we have shared 8 thoughts for a parsha called Emor, and hopefully you will be able to emor these positions to your families, and you too, and they, and you, and I, and all of Am Yisrael will experience a Shabbat Shalom to all.